This is Tyler and Shay. Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Chicago. Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Good morning and welcome on in. Rookie minicamp officially underway. It's Tyler Rocky Woo-hoo! And Shay Norling talking some football with you. You want to join us, 312-332-3776. On with you until 9 o'clock today. Have you ever been this hyped for a rookie minicamp? Or were you hyped for rookie minicamp yesterday?
I feel like my answer's the wrong answer. No. It's cool. I'm glad we got to see Caleb Williams get on the golf cart and do the bear claw, but...
I love the bear claw, by the way.
Listen, if anybody thinks I give a rip what happened on the field yesterday...
Oh, no one really... I mean, that doesn't really matter, but
I get the tongue-in-cheekness of it. Like, oh, look at the Torrey Taylor putt! That's the best putt I've ever seen!
I do think, though, it's a sign that we have taken another step towards football being back. Like, there's little landmarks, and Wednesday will be another one when the schedule comes out. And then you just get closer and closer as you encroach on training camp and the Hall of Fame game and all that stuff. But I don't know. I feel like getting hyped up for a rookie mini camp is kind of a down bad phase of being a sports fan and being a football fan in particular.
It is. And you know what's funny is, like, the Cubs are good. And I think it's interesting how, like, the Bears are... we expect to be so good, or the future is so bright, that Chicago as a city of sports fans is down bad for rookie minicamp.
Well, because
it's
okay,
like incredible, but there's never been a rookie minicamp like this.
Right. So, no, there really hasn't, especially in this city. But here's the thing, is the next step for like the Bear fan development, like the positivity, the excitement and the hype is right now. But next time, when we get to this time, like a year from now, that's when cynicism is going to start to set in, right? Like, this team hopefully has some success this upcoming season, and I think they will, whether that's playoffs, whether that's a 9-win, 10-win season, like whatever it is next year, I think it's certainly in the cards for the Chicago Bears. But then you get into next season, and then it feels like, all right, cynicism starts to kick in, and... You're talking junk about your team, despite the fact that they are coming off of a good season, and they did take a step in the right direction, and hopefully the quarterback's looking good. But then it's probably the stage a lot of Packers fans are in right now. It's like, all right, I want to see this guy do it again with Jordan Love. Like, can he do it again like the other guys have done? Because he better be able to, or otherwise the season's a failure.
I've always, like, there's three phases for me in how fun a sports season can be. If your team is bad, then it's not fun at all. If your team is maybe four phases, fun, bad, you can have a good time. Like, you know, a bad team, but they play really well,
fun,
or they play
was,
really hard.
Like 3-14 Bears 2 years ago, first year under Eberflus, that was fun, bad.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, Justin Fields is popping off.
Right.
We got something to be excited about. That's fun, bad. You can enjoy it. There's surprise good, which is the absolute best place to be.
Texans
because,
last year.
Yeah, then you're just on a cloud.
Right?
You are on a magic carpet ride to meet God. Like, everything is working perfectly. You didn't expect it, and you're just on the greatest little light show you've ever been on.
Uh-huh.
And then there's when the team is good, and that is not fun at all.
That is where, like, the blood pressure needs check-in and all that stuff. Like, that is... it's a dangerous place. And then... is the last phase for you, like, good with expectations or something along those lines?
Like, but that's the way I am. Like, if the team is good, then I have expectations and I'm no longer having fun with it.
Right.
Like, I'm more locked in, but it's less fun because every loss feels like, you know, a gunshot.
I will say, I think one of the most strenuous points to be in fandom is you're expecting a team to be average and then they end up being good. A little bit, I'm trying to think of who the best example of that would be from a year ago. But, like, when you're expecting a team to be, like, oh, like, 8-9 wins, and then they're actually, like, a 11-12 win team, and that right there just...
Maybe Detroit is the right example of, like, that team will be okay. And then it's like, holy cow, they're like insane.
Maybe, but like last year, like Detroit had a successful season.
Right.
By all accounts. And like, I feel like it's like a, just a step, like I feel like Detroit was a little bit too good last year for that barometer.
They right might there. Have had surprise good in them because they were expected to be good, but not that good.
But Detroit was expected to make the playoffs last
right.
year. And I think this is a team where it's like, you think the playoffs are in the realm of possibility, but you wouldn't be shocked if they missed the playoffs
as well.
You know
what it was Pittsburgh. Because that would have been torture. Having to go through the season and being like, we're just okay. And then it's like, actually, the defense is incredible. And
you know who it was? Cleveland.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Cleveland, I think, yeah, Cleveland kind of fits that mold right there.
It's a terrible spot to be as a fan because, especially in the NFL, then you're just like on the apron of the playoffs all season, and your team probably stinks. You're not good enough to win a Super Bowl, but you're good enough that you can expect to make the playoffs. That's mm-hmm. That is a tough needle to thread.
No doubt about it. Like I look at my expectation for this year, and it's one of those things where Caleb Williams can certainly change the tenor of it all, is I expect the Bears to kind of be knocking on the door of the playoffs. I think they get into the playoffs based on the way everything's being constructed for next season. But if Caleb Williams is just incredible, like I saw Matt Miller yesterday say his bold prediction for the upcoming NFL season and the rookie class was that Caleb Williams would become the best quarterback in the NFC. Like if Caleb Williams is the best quarterback in the NFC next year, then we're talking about like a 12-win football team.
Yeah.
And that team right there, you're going to have lofty expectations for it when it gets to the playoffs, despite the fact that, and I was talking about this a little bit with Pat the Designer yesterday on the Chicago Bears podcast, was that like this team, if they like get some level of expectations like that, like, and Caleb is that good, like the expectations for this team all of a sudden change overnight because it's kind of a wait and see game with the quarterback. But if the quarterback's ready to go and plays at a CJ Stroud level that we saw next year, like the expectation is that this team is going to be really good and can make a significant playoff run. But the problem is you look at the roster, there is not a lot of playoff or significant playoff experience on this roster.
Well, that's my thing. Like I kind of badly want to be able to get on the air and just tell people, like, you are making the playoffs this season. It's going to happen. Can't say you're going to win the division because Green Bay and Detroit are so good. But, like, I want to be able to say you are making the playoffs. And I can't yet because it's all on Caleb Williams. And when it's mm-hmm. all on a rookie quarterback, if the trenches on both sides of the ball were a little bit better, not that they're bad. Like, your starting center is a guy you traded a fifth-round pick for who didn't play a ton of center in Buffalo. And Ryan
probably
Bates.
Was going to get cut.
Yeah, and you go and get Coleman Shelton, and part of me is like, well, why isn't he the center? Whatever, yeah. I'm not going to geek out over this. But I'm just making the point, like, I like this roster on the perimeters, both sides of the ball. Love the secondary, love the weaponry on offense. The backfield I don't care about because I'm... The offensive line drives the running game. Mm-hmm. The offensive line, I like parts of it. Like Braxton, I think, is average to slightly above average. Darnell Wright could be really good. But the interior of the offensive line, I got no clue. And then the defensive line, love Montez Sweat. What the hell else do you have to show me? So I badly want to be like, this team is going to the playoffs. And you can. If you get, like, the Justin Herbert rookie season out of Caleb Williams and he throws 30 touchdowns and 10 or fewer picks and he can go for 4,000 yards, you're going to make the playoffs because that's incredible. Like, that you'll score so many points.
I mean, you'll be talking about probably one of the, what, five best offenses in football?
And this does have the infrastructure to be that kind of thing for a quarterback with the weaponry that he has. When I'm looking at a team that I feel comfortably can make the playoffs and make waves and win once you get into January, I need to see the trenches on both sides of the ball be a little better than this. And so I'm just not ready to go there. I would love to. I want nothing more than to do it. I can't yet.
And I think the question mark at quarterback as well, like, what are the growing pains going to be like? Because you can say what you want. Like, CJ Stroud, phenomenal last year. Justin Herbert, phenomenal in his rookie season. But it wasn't like there weren't growing pains along the way. Caleb's going to hit his speed bumps along the way at a certain point. And it's just going to be, how does that change the tune of the season or impact it in any sort of way? Because we have seen times where rookie quarterbacks look great, and then all of a sudden that rookie wall sort of hits. There's a little more tape on you. Defensive coordinators start to figure you out a little bit, or at least can slow you down a little bit. And listen, I think rookie quarterbacks now are more prepared to play this game than ever before. It used to be almost a non-starter that, like, rookie quarterbacks, unless you were the number one overall pick, would sit for a little bit and then ultimately get into the games. But now it's like, if you're a first rounder, the expectation, like, the only question mark about playing time right now is really Michael Penix. Like, Michael Penix, we probably, barring an injury, won't see for a couple of years. Like, the plan is not to start Michael Penix for the next 3 years.
Yeah, it's stupid.
But the other guys that were drafted, I would be shocked if all the first rounders don't see time this year.
I think May might not play.
At all?
Yeah, I'm starting to get that vibe. I didn't think that initially, but I'm starting to get the vibe out of New England. Like, they know their roster's not close, and they don't want to put him on the field this year. They'll just ride with Jacoby Brissett.
But I feel like a lot of those situations end up getting to a point where the guy who's in place, so in this case Jacoby Brissett, is not good.
Yeah, he stinks.
And it gets to a certain point where it's like, all right, let's just get this guy a couple of NFL reps.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened with Trubisky and Dalton, right? Mm-hmm. It took a punctured lung, but Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert, the same thing.
But it's like you did have the ability to give the vet his job back. And we saw it with Justin Fields. You had the ability to give Andy Dalton his job back. You chose not to. In the case of Trubisky, it was just a flat-out benching of Glennon. In the case of Herbert, it was, you had a chance to give the veteran his job back. You really couldn't at that point because of the way
Herbert was incredible.
Because of the way he played, and clearly there was no sort of growing pain or roadblock along the way there.
Just on this topic, I was, the one thing that I really liked from rookie minicamp, A, was Caleb's presser. I thought it was fantastic.
You get psyched up for pressers?
No, I'm not. I typically don't care at all.
I don't care about press conferences at all.
It does not mean a single thing to me, but just, like, listening to him, not that I think it matters or that I particularly care. And, like, obviously he can sit up there and say all the right things and also be a total POS. It's not like that happens in sports. But it was nice to hear a guy who everybody slammed for being, like, an egotistical, arrogant whatever. Mm-hmm. And he had none of that. I just thought it was, like, cool to hear a guy who seemed really humble. But what I really liked was Matt Eberflus just coming out and saying he is our starting quarterback.
Well, yeah. I mean, like,
we all know, but there's a difference between us knowing and if you ask Eberflus. Honestly, I thought he would have been the kind of guy to be like, yeah, you know, I don't have the answer to that question right now. We're going to go through the process of camp and we'll figure it out. But to just come out and go, yeah, he's our starting quarterback. Like, of course he is, but that has to feel good if you're Caleb, too, that already May 10th, May 11th, you are the starting quarterback on this team. There's no doubt about it.
You know what that is to me? It's a sign that you're acting like an adult franchise, finally. Like, we've seen this team and a number of teams play the game of competition with the quarterback when everyone knows the, all 53 spots are up for grabs. Everyone knows. Everybody knows who the starting quarterback is. And I think that is, you're right, because I think Eberflus, my previous thoughts on Eberflus would have been that, yeah, he would be the type of guy who would waffle back and forth and use the C word of competition to kind of brew something up like that. But I think you're right. I think that was a good thing to see out of the gate in terms of let's get out there and let's talk about this guy as our starting quarterback, because let's be honest, let's face the facts, he is going to be your starting quarterback, so let's treat it as such.
Yeah, it's probably a rational thought, but I just think it's a better way to develop him, like, with the knowledge that there's no pressure on you to compete for this. It's your job. Let's just go through the process and get you as good as we can for the start. I loved it. And I think it's a good thing overall. And, like, again, the Caleb presser I don't actually care about. It was nice to hear a guy, like, the thing I liked was when they were asking him about how to be a leader. And he's like, well, if I'm going to lead, I have to follow first. And I'm like, that you never hear that from a quarterback. I never heard anything like that from Justin Fields. Like, it just, not to slam Fields either. It's just,
I don't think it's a Fields thing. I think that's a, yeah, it's an any quarterback.
If that's legitimate, I feel like his mindset is in the right place. And yeah, that made me feel good. But again, I don't really care.
Right. 312-332-3776.
Just before we go to break, it's like I'm trying to, oh, I really cared about this thing from rookie minicamp. And then I'm like, yeah, but it's rookie minicamp. Like, what about?
Right. You're not going to gain anything out of it. It's a glorified varsity versus the JV team.
Right. Whatever. It just, thanks, Caleb, for doing a good presser. Yeah. That's my point.
312-332-3776 if you want to join us. I will say the Bear Claw, unbelievably unifying among Bears fans. I love it. It's, I think, one of the greatest things to hit the city in a long time.
Very happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. There is a quarterback power rankings list that has stirred up Shea Norling. And I think it's stirred up a lot of football fans as well.
Should
based
have,
on
anyway.
Where, basically where the second quarterback is ranked. We'll do all that when we come back here. Tyler Aki, Shea Norling, we're talking with you until 9 o'clock here on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shea on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
By the way, the Bears' first rookie has signed. Torrey Taylor, the weapon.
Yes.
The multiplier.
Absolute
officially
multiplier.
On the books. No, no holdout from Torrey Taylor. Can you imagine if a punter held out in the city?
I would have been incredible. Are you kidding me? If he held out, we would have immediately been vindicated on the fact that
yes,
that's a
1,000%.
That's a bad pick. Bad pick.
312-332-3776. You want to talk football with us? Bears, day two of minicamp will take place a little bit later on today. I want to get to this. This was the NFL quarterback power rankings from CBS. And I know you're fired up about this because, at no surprise, number one, and rightfully so, Patrick Mahomes. But number two really has you hot and bothered. And that is because it is Brock Purdy checking in at number two. And I agree with, like, Brock Purdy is a fine quarterback. He is a fine quarterback. He is not ahead of the likes of Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, C.J. Stroud, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts. I wouldn't put him ahead of Dak Prescott, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers. Like that, I have major issues with him at number two, and I know you do too. And listen, I get that he has known nothing but winning in the NFL. And it does take a certain level of quarterback, despite the fact of what is around him, it does take a certain level of quarterback to get to consecutive NFC championships and one Super Bowl as well. However, that does not automatically qualify you as the number two quarterback in all of football.
They've been in the conference championship game in four of the last five seasons. He's been there for two. Something tells me it ain't the quarterback. Like, the whole thing on this power rankings deal, and it's not, I'm not calling Brock Purdy a bum. I'm not saying he stinks. But when I got to read the, and this list went around, like, people were suddenly talking about quarterback rankings this week. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then I pull up the list and I see Brock Purdy, number two quarterback in all of football. You are outside of your mind. Out of your mind. If I put Josh Allen on the 49ers in the Super Bowl, just parachute him in. Mm-hmm. They win the Super Bowl.
And it may not be close.
They were the better roster than Kansas City by quite a bit. They win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because I look back at that Super Bowl, and a lot of that came down to the difference in the level of quarterback play and how Mahomes is just quarterback Jesus. And on the other side, you've got Brock Purdy, who runs the system very well. And listen, he runs the system very well, about as well as you could ask.
That's what's asked of him.
But he also puts a cap on sometimes what your team can be as well. And there are certain big moments that are not going to be delivered in. I think a lot of what helps Brock Purdy out is the whole team's so good. You do get out to a lot of big leads. The stats look very good, but you don't have the same level of battle-testedness if that's even a word, as some of these other quarterbacks who have to play in a lot of clutch two-minute situations because there are deficiencies spread out across the roster. Because you command a lot of money and it's tougher to beef up the rest of your roster to the standard of the quarterback.
Yeah, and it's also just, like, my issue with this list, and I'm not trying to call Jared Goff great either, but Jared Goff ranks 13th. And it's all about, like, this blurb. Perhaps no signal caller has done more to restore respect in recent years. Of course, that's true. Like, Jared Goff leaving L.A. was a laughingstock, and now in Detroit, it's like, oh, he's a legitimate quarterback. But why does he sit at 13th and Purdy sits at 2? Why does Purdy get all the credit in a Shanahan offense with all pros at every position? You've got Kittle, Ayuk, Debo. You've got Christian McCaffrey.
Trent Williams.
Trent Williams is your left tackle. Like, if you know that many names on an offense, the offense is pretty good. And
Kyle Juszczyk's fantastic.
A fullback. I don't get why Purdy gets so much credit for what San Francisco accomplishes with an offense that Jimmy G was able to do this with. But Goff gets none of the credit for the Lions offense because we have an understanding with the Lions offense. Goff's in a perfect scenario. He's got a great offensive line. The line with Taylor Decker and Penei Sewell, Frank Ragnow in the middle. He's got all these weapons and Amon-Ra St. Brown and all the running game's incredible. Goff's in a good system. Why do we do that for Goff? But when it's Brock Purdy, just because his team won the games the two times or the one time, it's like, oh, he's incredible, the number two quarterback in football. They're the same guy. Goff and Purdy are the exact same guy. They're fine, probably a little bit above average pro-level quarterbacks who are in unbelievable systems with unbelievable play callers and a ton of talent up front to protect them. That's it.
I wonder how the conversation would be different if he was a third-round pick. Like, if Brock Purdy was a third-round pick instead of Mr. Irrelevant, if he was a third-round pick, would we be looking at him differently?
Yeah.
I think more of like a, oh, we kind of expect him to do this.
Yeah, I think so. I think if he were, like, a second, third-round pick, he would be ranked where Goff's ranked on this list. Like, but because of the story and the Mr. Irrelevant thing and the fact that he came in as an injury replacement and won every game until he got injured in the conference title last year against Phil, or 2 years ago against Philadelphia. And then it's like, well, could he be really good? And then he has another great year with San Francisco. All of a sudden, he's the number two quarterback in football. You're out of your mind.
Like, what has he done that's so much different than what Jalen Hurts has done, right? And Jalen Hurts checks in at 7 on this list, but Jalen Hurts was a second-round pick. And Jalen Hurts does a lot of the same things Brock Purdy does. Like, I don't think Jalen Hurts is some sort of multiplier by any stretch. I do think he's a part of a great offense that is run, I mean, last year at the end kind of scuttled a little bit, but is run very well. He's got weapons galore to throw to. He's got a really good infrastructure, really good offensive line. Like, everything's sort of there for him. And is it the fact that Jalen Hurts has gotten paid? Is it the fact that Jalen Hurts was a second-round pick and not a seventh-round pick? Is that the difference between them in this list? Because that's what I don't get.
I wonder if it's the fact that Jalen Hurts was actually good in his Super Bowl appearance.
That too.
What has he done that Brock Purdy hasn't? I don't know. Be good in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Like, that they lost, but yeah, that's actually a really good comp because they both were the beneficiaries of incredible play calling. Shane Steichen in Philadelphia and obviously Shanahan in San Francisco. They both made the Super Bowl and they both lost to Patrick Mahomes.
And the difference is continuity with the offensive play caller. I guess that's your difference there, right? Because the weapons largely stayed the same year to year. Everything else, the infrastructure largely stayed the same aside from the play caller.
Just, I'm done with the Brock Purdy thing. I'm already declaring this my least favorite narrative heading into the 2024 season.
Now, this is just one man's opinion.
I get it, but we saw a lot of this last year. Like, I had to hear Lewis Riddick talk about I had to pretend like Brock Purdy was an MVP candidate all season. Like, no, you didn't. But if they're going to feed us that last year, you think they're not going to do it again this year? I'm already sick of it. It hasn't even started yet. Brock Purdy. I can see it now. NFL Live. Brock Purdy, top 5 quarterback in football? Question mark. Let's ask the panel. And then half of them will say yes because they can't have their own thought.
Where would you guys rank him right now on that list? Where would you put him?
All right, so just going through it. Obviously, Mahomes won. I have both Allen and Burrow ahead of him, Stroud ahead of him, Lamar ahead of him. I would put Jalen Hurts ahead of him. I would put Herbert ahead of him. I would put Jordan Love. I would put...
That's nine quarterbacks you've said?
Yes, that's nine right there. I would put Aaron Rodgers ahead of him.
Dak?
I would not put Dak ahead of him.
Tua?
No, definitely not
definitely
Tua.
Definitely not Tua.
Tua?
No, probably not after last year.
So we're like at the 11, kind of 12 mark.
I'll tell you.
But are we doing... Okay, how are we doing this? Are we doing this if you drop Trevor Lawrence on the Niners? Like, is that what we're doing here?
Well, if we want to play that game, if I drop Dak on the Niners, I'd rather have Dak than Purdy.
I don't think it changes much.
Probably. It might not, but like, I still think I'd rather have Dak. And I don't even like Dak.
You could put Geno Smith on the 49ers.
That's my entire point.
Exactly. Yeah.
With this whole thing. Like, if I put Jared Goff on the Niners, do the Niners still go to the Super Bowl? And is it Goff who's two on this list after losing to Kansas City?
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where it gets so ridiculous. And you ask where I would put him. Well, they have Goff at 13 on this list, and they have Cousins at 14 on this list. All things being equal, remove the rest. I'm sandwiching Purdy right in between Jared Goff and Kirk Cousins. That's where I'm putting him.
I'm okay with that.
They're all three the same guy. They need to be in a perfect situation. They aren't great, but they're good enough. And if everything is right around them, you can go a long way.
I will say, Brock Purdy at 2 is absurd. You know what else is absurd to me? Tua Tagovailoa at 12.
Yeah, I don't get what Tua is.
Where's the Tua love coming from? Because I feel like the offensive weaponry and play calling is even more pronounced with the Miami Dolphins than it is in San Francisco.
The things that McDaniel does with Tyreek Hill make life so easy for Tua.
Jalen Waddle. I mean, pick your running back out of that backfield. They all shine because they all run 4.3s.
And the problem I have with Tua is, like, and I was a guy who was, I was a tank for Tua guy back in whatever year that was, 19, 18, whatever that was. I thought he was this quote-unquote generational talent. I know everybody hates that.
2020, I believe, yeah.
Hasn't worked the way that we thought it would necessarily. Mm-hmm. But he has a lot of stinkers, man. For every good game that Tua throws out there with Waddle and Tyreek and all these weapons and McDaniel calling the offense, and there are a lot, like the 70-piece against Denver or a few of the games where like him and Tyreek just snap. But for every one of those, there's a game where he's like entering halftime 7 of 18 or something. Just horrible.
I mean, it's...
What was it, the Steeler game where he was just atrocious on primetime?
He's a fantasy football merchant. That's what he is. Like, the yards after catch count the same on your ledger. And that is a team that prides itself on yards after catch.
That's my point with Purdy, too. Like, all these Shanahan offenses, and this is really unfair, but all of these Shanahan offenses... Maybe with the exception of the Packers, because I don't think they do it quite as much. But specifically San Francisco and Miami and Los Angeles, the Rams. I think the quarterback gets a little too much credit in all of those systems. Because the play calling is designed to open guys up. Deebo Samuel, I'm going to say something. And I don't know if people know this. Deebo Samuel's not that good. Deebo Samuel's a guy who gets advantage of, like, Kyle Shanahan doing the funkiest motion anybody's ever seen to get him on a freaky mismatch, and then he's just flying across the field. You put him on any other team, he's average.
I think that Deebo kind of reminds me, it's a little bit like Purdy in a sense, where, like, he does his job in that offense very well. But if you put him in different situations, it may not go as well. And... Now, okay, back to sort of the Tua, like, and I guess this kind of goes in line with Purdy, but like, Tua's up for a fifth year, or for a contract extension, I should say. He's up for a contract extension. If I'm Miami, there's no way I'm giving him that sort of money. Like, what kind of money is he going to be commanding here? He's not going to ask for a reset the market money, but he's going to ask for a significant sum, and it's not something that I'm willing to entertain. Like, now our next quarterback holdup that we're looking at, I think, is the Jordan Love, Tua contracts that could be handed out. And I don't know if Tua's going to necessarily get his.
There's something interesting we can get into with Jordan Love, too, like if we want to go down this road.
You want to do that coming up next?
Yeah, because there's a couple things happening in the division that are going to be very interesting at quarterback.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. All right, we'll talk a little bit. NFC North quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa, all that coming up next. Tyler Aki and Shea Norling with you.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Talking some quarterback rankings with you on ESPN 1000. Tyler Rock and Shay Norling with you till 9 o'clock. Miss anything, check it out on the podcast. What are we on? The basketball U-tab still? Is that where we're at, Potsy?
It's up to Potsy.
We are. We need to get a new tab. We need to get another tab for you guys.
Send that into management.
Yeah.
See how quickly that gets shut down.
Yeah. They're going to laugh in our faces and then spit on us.
Go. Maybe kick us while we're down.
Go back into your dungeon, clown.
Look at this guy's shirt out here. He's got the cute, what does that say? QB number one. Finger.
That's awesome.
Fingernail
paint. That's sweet.
That is awesome. What a great shirt. Did not expect to see that this morning. We've been talking a lot of quarterbacks here on the show today. Just to kind of go through the division here. Jordan Love on this list of quarterback power rankings is slotted at 10. Jared Goff at 13. Then you get into the division. Get into the rookies, I should say, in the division. Caleb Williams at 23, J.J. McCarthy at 25. I get why the rookies are where they are. Maybe J.J. a little too high. But looking at the top two, Jordan Love and Jared Goff, both guys that need some money at this point.
Can either of them win a Super Bowl in your mind?
I think Jordan Love can.
Okay.
Because I think Jared Goff in the right circumstance can.
Here's the problem with it. I think maybe they both can. I don't know if either of them can do it while making $50 million.
I'll say Jordan Love can. Because look at what he worked with this year.
Yeah, that's true. But just historically speaking, unless your quarterback is Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, or Patrick Mahomes, you cannot win the Super Bowl with your quarterback taking that level of the salary cap.
It's very, very difficult.
And that, like, just in it, from a historical perspective, that means you have to have one of the three greatest quarterbacks of all time. And I don't think Jordan Love or Jared Goff are in that conversation, which, for me, I'm, like, looking at this offseason, and I think the Lions have a really difficult decision to make. And Brad Holmes, their general manager, has not tipped his hand. He talked on the radio station in Detroit this week and was, like, very non-committal, just kind of canned. We're working on it. But the number
that's given out a lot of money this offseason.
Yeah, they paid Penei Sewell, they paid Amon-Ra St. Brown, and the money that's being floated around for Jared Goff is north of the $50 million mark.
He's not a $50 million quarterback.
And that's just, for me, like, I get it. You have your quarterback in place. You just went to an NFC title game. You probably have to do it because the alternative is Hendon Hooker and a quarterback class next year where, like, Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers are the top two. That sure certainly isn't this year's quarterback class. And I get you having to do that and pay him. For the Packers, I think it's, we believed in Jordan Love. We sat him for this level of time. We gave him his extension, and we have him for another season. But he was really good, and if we extend him now, we might actually save ourselves some money in the long run. So I think they're in a position, and the reporting has been this summer, they may pay Jordan Love $50 million. I kind of feel like if those two teams do that, this year might be tough sledding for the Bears with the Packers and the Lions ready built and ready to go. But once you get deeper into the period of time where you're paying your quarterback $50 million a year, I would rather be in the situation that the Bears and the Vikings are in, with the ability to spend everywhere else and having Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy on rookie contracts.
So just for reference here, here are the quarterbacks that are slated to make north of $50 million this year. Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow. That's the list. Quarterbacks that are making less than that. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. In terms of, like, significant level quarterbacks, they're making mid to low 40s. On their salaries.
Yeah. So you're going to have an offseason where you're going to see Jared Goff and Jordan Love join that top group.
Like Jared Goff.
Almost certainly.
Jared Goff makes $33.5 million this year. That feels right at his value.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he feels like a $33.5 million quarterback.
This is the nature of the market, though, man. Like, this is what it is. And in 5 years, 4 years, we're going to be, I hope we're talking about Caleb Williams getting a $65 million a year contract or whatever the number is going to be when we get to that point. And I hope that he's good enough to have earned it. Like, I hope that that's where we end up. It's just, it makes the team building a lot more difficult. So I'm just looking around the division at these two quarterbacks, both of whom might be outside the top 10 in pure talent. Love's probably likelier to be in than Goff.
I have Love firmly in.
But they're not top 5. They're not top 7. And you're going to end up paying them top 2 money? That's the part of this that scares me with those two teams, and it makes me a little bit more confident about the future for the Bears.
It certainly does makes me feel confident about the Bears passing by the Lions. I think the Bears can pass by the Lions. The Packers, is what scares me a little bit. Because of the fact that we did see Jordan Love elevate a bunch of first and second year receivers.
Bo Melton.
Like, it didn't matter. And the play caller is going to be there for the long haul, it seems like, with Matt LaFleur. Like, listen, Jordan Love, maybe he's Brock Purdy. Maybe he is. But it felt like there was a little bit more spectacular in what he did than what Brock Purdy was doing.
Yeah, I think the Lions are probably easier to see fading more quickly just because, and not that they won't be sustainable, but they are.
Listen, you can't have three sustainable teams in the same division.
Correct.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, well, the NFC North. AFC North, I mean.
Sustainable, though? Like, we see dips with the Ravens. We see dips with the Browns. We see dips with basically everyone except the Steelers.
Who's more sustainable, the Lions or the Packers? I think it's two different questions, because if you look at the Lions, you have a front office that's arguably been the best in football the last few years.
Well, let's not discount what the Packers have done in the front office.
I'm not. I'm just saying, like, the Lions in the draft, nails. A-plus the last 3 years, even when they've broken every rule. And it looks like the latest draft is another good one. Two corners, Terrion Arnold, Kool-Aid McKinstry. Not Kool-Aid McKinstry. Whoever, the kid out of Missouri. The Rakestraw. Another good draft for them. A front office that there's no reason not to believe in. And they're roster ready. Like, they are roster built. The offensive line's great. They have the ability to cycle through it. Penei Sewell, incredible. Locked up now. Amon-Ra, locked up now. Defense, getting better. You've addressed the secondary.
About, okay, you talk about last year's draft, all right? You had two picks in, what was it, top 16? Or top 20 or whatever it was? And you took a running back and an off-ball linebacker.
Yeah, that'll hurt them in the long run.
Those look good right now. But what happens if Jahmyr Gibbs is Najee Harris?
So this is why I'm making the point of the sustainability thing. Is like, as much as that made them better for last year, I think it hurts them in the long run.
Did you get guys that are going to be with you for at least 8 years?
Because Jack Campbell was fine, and Gibbs was awesome. But like you said, what if he's Najee? Najee's not getting his fifth-year option picked up.
Now, LaPorta? That's a different
really good
story.
Player.
Really good player, and you can see there's some longevity there.
The safety who's from Bama, I can't think of the kid's name. He's good. But my point is, they're built through the roster, and then they have the kind of question at quarterback, and they're going to have to pay him. Whereas the Packers, I feel like, have more questions on their roster. The receivers look good, but who knows? Is Jaden Reed really that legit? Christian Watson, who knows? I don't know. Defensively, there's a lot of money on that side of the ball and a lot of guys who are aging, even though they are overall a young team. Made a good deal with the Giants, getting Xavier McKinney to play in the backfield. Yeah. But I thought the Aaron Jones to Minnesota thing was horrible. And getting Josh Jacobs, I thought they made a downgrade in their backfield. So I just, like, for the Packers, it's all in the quarterback. And you better be right. You're going to pay him $50 million. Whereas the Lions, I feel like, weirdly, I'm less confident in them being sustainable, but I think they have more room for error in paying Goff. Does that make sense?
More room for error in paying
because Goff. The rest of their roster is already so well set up, I think they have the margin for error afforded to them. Whereas if the Packers pay Love and he's bad, they're effed. Or if they pay him and he's like not better than 10 in the league, that's not good. Then you're the Cowboys with Dak. And then if you're the Bears, you're like, oh, let's go. This is our time.
To a degree, yes. My whole thing is that I don't think the Packers roster is very good, and they were a good team last year. And I think a lot of it had to do with the quarterback.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the quarterback is an elevator because You look at the receivers that were around him. They're solid players, but they're like B players. There's no like none of those guys in that receiver room can you drop on a team and make them a number one receiver. In fact, I don't even think a lot of them could be good twos on teams. Like, they have a bunch of threes and a couple twos on their team. That's what they have in that receiver room. And some guys, they wouldn't even crack the rotation on a lot of teams, I would imagine. And if you look at the head, I think the head coach slash play caller element is important, because Minnesota and Green Bay are the only two teams in the division that have the head coach as the play caller. And I think they both do it at a very high level. And if the Bears, like, let's say Shane Waldron's great, and Ben Johnson certainly has been great, but both of those guys, if they continue to be good, they're not long for their respective teams. They'll be out. They'll go find a head coaching job. And I know Ben Johnson's hung around for a while.
He's going to be gone this year.
I can't imagine he is still with this team when we get to 2025.
Yeah, he's going to be gone. Do you have any fear that Waldron's a one-year hire?
No. Because I do think we are starting to see a trend of guys sticking around at least for another year. And I can't say I know what the situation is like in Detroit, but I do feel like the Bears built well underneath him. Thomas Brown,
yeah,
a guy who's been an offensive coordinator in the league, a well-respected offensive coordinator in the league as well. And he was a guy that the Bears interviewed to take Shane Waldron's job too.
Yeah.
I would feel confident in bumping him up when things are... It almost feels a little bit to me... Now, it's a little bit removed, but the way that Buffalo went from Dable, and Dorsey was all right, not great, but he got scapegoated, and then Joe Brady came in and it was fine.
Yeah.
That's, to me, what I could see happening with the Chicago Bears.
Okay. I'm more asking, like, because I don't... If Waldron's a one-year hire, I'm not...
Now, I will say
the unknown of who replaces him doesn't bother me. I just hope that he's not, because the continuity of an offensive coordinator for a rookie. Like, how attractive is it that Waldron gets to coach Caleb Williams?
Extremely.
How does that keep him around longer than your average Bear would stay?
I think so. I mean, like, think about...
And how attractive does the situation have to be for him to be? Because, like, we could have thought that was true with Steichen and Jalen Hurts. Boy, I get to coach this guy. I want to stick around. But Steichen's like, no, I'm going to the Colts. Granted, there was Mecha Godzilla in the form of Anthony Richardson in the draft. That ain't going to happen if Shane Waldron chooses to leave. What's he going to go? Oh, Quinn Ewers. I'd rather coach him.
Yeah. But, like, look at Bobby Slowick. Stuck around with C.J. Stroud. Like, and I think we can all agree C.J. Stroud's a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts is. And you're hoping that at the end of this season, we're talking about Caleb Williams in the same way that we talked about C.J. Stroud this past season. And so maybe that's attractive enough for Shane Waldron to stick around. So 312-332-3776. You want to talk some football with us? When we come back, I've got a little bit of a hat dilemma, a gift dilemma that I want to run by you.
Can't wait.
We'll do that when we return. Tyler Rocky, Shane Norling, talking with you until 9 a.m. here on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Thank you to Justin Pottinger for producing today's show. If you missed anything, check it out on the podcast. It's under the Basketball U tab if you missed any of it. Real quick dilemma for you, all right? So I got my girlfriend a Cubs hat. She's a Mets fan, but I got her a Cubs hat to wear when we go to games together. I split season tickets with some buddies, so I go to a good number of Cubs games this year. I told her, I would like you to wear the hat. Like, show a little team spirit.
Of course.
Except when they play the Mets. If they're playing the Mets, wear whatever Mets gear you want. I don't care. She took issue with this. I forget what game we went to. We went to a game probably about a month ago at this point, and she didn't want to wear the hat. And I was like, you didn't wear your Cubs hat today? And she was like, no, I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm not wearing the hat. I'm not just going to wear the hat whenever we go to a Cubs game.
You bought her the hat, right?
Yes.
She should wear the hat.
I agree. And you want to know the thing that really pissed me off about it, too? We went to a White Sox-Red Sox game last year. She has a Red Sox hat. Just wore the Red Sox hat to the game. So you'll wear the Red Sox hat to the Red Sox game, but you won't wear the Cubs hat. The team, Red Sox, she has zero affiliation to.
I feel like she was trying to take a dig at you now. I think she was taking a swipe.
A swipe?
Yeah.
How's this?
I think she was taking a swipe at you. I don't know. But it's interesting. She'll wear the Red Sox gear to the Red Sox game. You said White Sox, Red Sox?
White Sox, Red Sox.
She's not even supporting the city she lives in. She's just showing up in a Red Sox hat?
No.
And she won't wear a Cubs hat to a Cubs game where they're not playing the Mets?
Exactly.
I went to opening day with you.
I wore
a Cubs hat.
You did. Out of support.
Because
you got
I'm a good friend.
And you got made fun of for it, too.
But again, like in August, I'm going to be wearing a different hat.
And that's fine. Yeah, like we're going to a couple Cubs-Tigers games this year.
I'm not wearing a Cubs hat.
And I am not asking you to. I would take our friend Jake Cantu, who, by the way, shout out to Jake Cantu.
R.
Miss you already, buddy.
I'm glad you said what you said because you only told me that this was she wouldn't wear the hat. I offered no opinion, but I was going to say if you bought her a Cubs hat and you're taking her to games, she has to wear that hat unless they're playing the Mets. Period.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes sense.
I
what hat did she wear?
She just wore like she wore the CDGA golf show hat, which love the CDGA.
Yeah, she's supporting you personally.
Yeah, but it's like we're at a Cubs game. Like when we golf, wear the golf hat. When we're at a Cubs game, wear the Cubs hat.
Especially since you bought it for her.
Yeah.
I can't even believe that.
I don't get it. All right.
She should have worn the hat. She should wear the hat every time.
Should I feel offended?
Yes.
Because I do.
I told you. I thought she's taking a swipe at
you. Greatly offended.
I don't know what the goal is. I don't know what she's looking to accomplish. But I'm pretty sure she hates you. That's where I'm at with this.
I agree. All right. That's going to do it for us. We'll talk to you next week. Tyler Rocky, Shane Norling, the CDGA Golf Show coming up next.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're gonna dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.